Hello and welcome to the Workshop Banter podcast episode 1. I'm Keith.
And I'm Matt. And in this one, we're going to talk about our backgrounds and how we got started with making things. One thing to mention before we get into it. Podcasting is new to us both, and the audio quality in this one isn't as good as it should have been. It's not terrible, but it's not great. So we'll figure out a way of resolving it ready for episode 2. We hope you enjoy the podcast.
Matt, how would you describe what it is that you do?
I'm a woodworker and YouTuber. I've been doing it, I think, about 5 years now. I started as a hobby, just really enjoyed woodworking. And then, influenced by some of the videos I was watching, I thought I'd have a go at that. So I mainly like doing rustic projects using reclaimed materials. And I sometimes work with other materials, a bit of metalwork and a bit of leatherworking as well. So Keith, how would you describe yourself?
I think it depends on who asks the question. Sometimes I call myself a YouTuber, other times woodworking and joinery, but generally, much like yourself, predominantly woodworking, but a maker of things in general. A little bit of furniture restoration, which I really enjoy. But the biggest thing for me is probably making things using salvaged materials.
I think that's a good point about how you say different things to different people. And I feel the same with what I say has changed over the years. As I used to make and sell much more things, as now YouTube has become such a bigger part of what I do.
Yeah, I was going to ask actually, because I know that when I spoke to you a few months back, you were doing really well on, was it Amazon Marketplace? Is that still something that you maintain?
It's strange how these things go in waves. Last year, during the lockdown, I think I had 1 month, I did nearly £5,000 worth of sales on Amazon.
Wow.
I was starting work at 7 a.m. until 7 p.m. without a break, making things. Just crazy. And I luckily had about 5 videos in the bag, so I could just not have to make any videos, working 7 days a week. As now, I've not sold anything in a month. I've been selling stuff locally on Facebook Marketplace, like tools. And when they come, I've gone, oh, do you want a gin rack while you're here, and giving bits away, just because I can't move with all the stuff. And I'm going to knock that on the head. And I've started a store on my Squarespace. And I'm going to start doing what you've been doing for years, which is you've made a cat bed and you've gone, I've made two. The second one's up on my Etsy store, and I'm going to do that. And then it kind of pays for the video. Instead of me buying materials to make a video, I'm at least can be financially neutral on the video.
Yeah. And in that killer month of sales that you had when you made almost £5,000, what sort of items were you selling?
It was all alcohol related, to be honest. I think the biggest seller was the gin racks, which just made out of some pallet wood. And I think people, because pubs were closed, were looking at creating little bars at home and things. It was just crazy. But Amazon is like a double-edged sword, as in if you do well, then it sees you're doing well. And then it goes, well, why are we not selling this product ourselves then? So I was making this handmade item. Now, if you put in gin rack or whiskey rack, there's loads of mass-produced India ones or China ones that look rustic, but clearly are made in a factory out of brand new materials. That market's dropped out, but it's not what I want to do anyway. I designed these things before YouTube as things to sell at craft fair. And you know, it's like something you made 6 years ago. If you looked at it now, you'd go, wow, my skills have so developed since then. So I don't want to be making these things anymore. I guess like if I made a one-off thing and I want to sell it for £80 and not give Amazon a cut, rather than selling something for £40 and giving Amazon £10, that's a lot of work for very little money.
Similarly to you, actually, a few years back, I was making things predominantly for sale or for customers. But like you, I've moved away from that towards more YouTube focused projects. And I think the only reason for that is because the YouTube revenue side of the business started to increase and my patience for making things for other people started to decrease. Obviously, there's a lot of hassle associated with shipping items. For example, I was selling items like coffee tables, which there are inherent problems with posting because they're heavy, large items. I remember situations where I was sending things like cat beds to the USA and paying about £175 in postage fees. And it always shocked me that people were actually prepared to pay that kind of money for shipping.
It's crazy.
But packing the items up and sending the items with the worry of whether it's actually going to arrive at the other end or not, it's all very stressful.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I find commissions the most stressful, because at least if you're selling an item, people have seen the item and then choose to buy it. The commission thing is someone has an idea in their head and then you have a different idea in your head and you hope the two meet up. Yeah. But also I found it was having different businesses, even though the making things and selling them and doing YouTube were completely different businesses. And I didn't have time for the two. What I realized is you can't do both properly.
Mm. So what was it that you did before getting into woodworking?
I was a chef before. I left school at 16 and went to college and studied computer science. And I had a part-time job in a kitchen. And then I decided to, when I finished my course, go full-time in the kitchen and then do a one-day-a-week release to actually train as a chef. Because doing 9 to 5 hours in a well-paid job, you know, wasn't for me. I wanted to work loads of hours for minimum wage. Woodworking was something I did on my day off for enjoyment and helped keep me sane, I think. Yeah, being a chef's very long hours, and there was quite an active social life and drinking, so it was good on a day off to do something productive, like make something.
I worked for a large insurance company, working in facilities management and looking after property for about 15 years. And I started the YouTube channel about 6 years ago, but it took a while for the YouTube woodworking side of things to be a full-time job. There are aspects of that job that I enjoyed. I did a lot of CAD work, which is mainly 2D modeling for things like floor plans and office furniture and stuff like that. But the vast majority of the work wasn't that enjoyable. But I've been making things for as long as I can remember, really. But the stuff that I made was always from reclaimed materials. I can remember situations where I would see a wardrobe on the side of the street and I'd go out late at night with a screwdriver to disassemble it and take it home. And those were the materials for the next project.
Using reclaimed materials is something I'm also interested in. I'm very interested in environmental matters and I'm very mean with money. So it works both ways. And I think at the moment, with timber prices being so high, reclaimed materials are probably a very popular choice for a lot of people.
Yeah, there's never been a better time to use salvaged wood for sure. And also the waste side of things. If I ever take anything to our local dump, I'm always looking over the fence at the wood bin to see what's in there. And I'm often horrified to see what's inside.
Yeah, it's amazing what people throw away.
For very little effort, these people could just list it on Facebook Marketplace for free and probably get someone just to swing by and pick it up.
I do that all the time.
Me too.
Remember I was going to get a skip. And then I thought, oh, I just list some rubbish on Facebook and people come and get it and they're so grateful. So it's quite nice to actually help people out and it saved you time, money and effort. So there was no real start point on woodworking for you. It's something you kind of always been doing. And I think it was the same for me because when I was a kid, my dad used to run a little independent DIY store and it had a wood yard and a massive saw, and I was always down there in the scrap bin nailing bits of wood together. So he was a keen DIYer.
Do you remember what some of those initial projects were for you?
I think all the projects I've done have been out of necessity in the past. It's wanting something that maybe either doesn't exist or is too expensive. And things in the house, if you've got an alcove, you can't just buy a cabinet to fit in there. You've got to make it because it needs to fit that space. So it's been projects like that.
Yeah, that I can completely relate to that. Some of the early projects for me revolved around, I was a musician for, I don't know, maybe 15 odd years. That was kind of my creative outlet while I was working at the insurance company, because I think it's healthy to have a creative outlet. I'm predominantly a guitarist, so at the time I needed things like pedal boards to hold effect pedals. I did a lot of studio work, recording production and stuff like that. So I was building units to hold recording equipment. I think I built a desk as well, my first desk for a makeshift recording studio. When I say makeshift recording studio, I actually mean a bedroom. But yeah, making things out of necessity at a very low standard, though, I might add. It wasn't until the YouTube thing started taking off for me that I actually got interested in the right way of doing things and joinery. Back then, I was just happy to throw in a few screws. And if at the end of the day, I had an item that I could make use of, I was more than happy.
Yeah, I think that's very true. It's amazing how when you know people are going to be watching what you're doing and see your work, how it motivates you to do better. And I know there'll be a few people listening going, wow, what does stuff look like when people aren't watching?
You clearly have quite a keen eye for aesthetics, though, because over the years, I've been watching your channel since the very beginning. And obviously, you're throwing in a lot of different materials like copper, like brass,
leather, and tying it all in with woodworking. And I think that's something that you do that I've not seen many other people take advantage of.
Yeah, I enjoy the look of different materials together, but I think I definitely could increase my woodworking skills. And maybe because I'm a jack of all trades, maybe the joinery suffers, but it is something I've got increasingly interested in. Have you thought about more kind of joinery? I don't think I've seen you ever cut a dovetail. Is that something you'd ever do?
I did do a dovetail box once. It was many years ago now, and I remember cutting the dovetails for this box. It took me, I think it was over a day just to do the dovetail joinery. And for me, that's not where my intentions lie. I think dovetails look very nice, and I think they're fantastic in terms of strength. But spending that much time to put together a project has just never appealed to me personally. I would much rather get a box joint jig on the table saw or a router table, something along those lines, and hack my way through it.
Yeah, I fancy having a go at it just to say I've done it. I mean, Matt Essley makes it look so easy, but I know that he spent years and years getting to that level. But I think, yeah, I'm much more about the finished product rather than the how you got there.
Yeah, and also I guess with the practicality of putting out a YouTube video every week, dovetails don't really lend themselves to that kind of schedule.
They definitely do not. So you've been woodworking for years, but why did you start doing YouTube videos?
I think I got started with woodworking on YouTube because I was watching so much content on YouTube. At the time, it was mainly John Heiss, Matthias Wandel. Channels like that really inspired me to look more into doing things at a higher standard and also invest more in tools. But my reasons for starting the YouTube channel were a little bit different. I mainly started that because I saw that there was a bit of a gap in the market in terms of there were no real channels out there using predominantly salvaged materials. But I know that a lot of woodworkers here in the UK do utilize those materials. So that was the main focus for my channel when I got started. And like I said, I'd always made things at quite a basic level, and seeing the type of projects that John Heiss was doing back then and the kind of innovative thinking that Matthias put into his projects really inspired me to sort of take it up a level and work on my skills. How about you?
I think I made a coat rack out of a pallet, and I thought, oh, I'm going to try something else. And I started Googling making things from pallets, and one of Bob Claggett's early videos from I Like to Make Stuff came up. I think it was a tray he made, and I'd never watched a YouTube video about someone making something, and it introduced this whole new genre to me. So I spent a few years watching the videos and enjoying them, and then I thought I'd have a go myself because you saw a gap in the market of not many reclaimed material channels, as I saw not many English channels, apart from your good self, but I saw yours and thought, oh, I could do better than that. Hope people know I'm joking. So I thought I'd give it a go, but I found it very intimidating. I'd never filmed anything before, and actually I was more worried about the editing, but I bought a DSLR camera, a Mac, and gave it a go. And yeah, it's definitely been a steep learning curve, which I'm still on.
Here's a question for you then. How many attempts did it take you to actually produce a video that you were happy to upload? And I guess the reason that I'm asking that is because I set up the camera probably on more than three or four occasions and started recording a project, and then just decided that me talking to camera was never going to be a smooth thing for me.
Well, I think I'm embarrassed to say then I must have very low standards, because I think I just filmed it and uploaded it. But if I looked back now at some, they're shocking. Some of the audio is terrible. Some of the lighting's terrible. But it's one of those things, almost when you're doing it, you can't see that yourself. You need to look back a few years later. But hopefully my skills have developed over the years. But yeah, no, I think I just went for it and uploaded it.
Do you remember what the first project was on your channel?
I remember looking into how to do YouTube, and people suggested you should upload several videos at once. So I think I filmed four over a few weeks and uploaded them all at the same time. But I'm pretty sure a wooden beer crate was one of the first ones. And it still gets a lot of views to this day.
That's interesting. I think the first video on my channel was actually building a workshop in my garden, because prior to that, all of my woodworking was done on a patio, and I really wanted somewhere where I could keep my tools dry and keep out of the British weather.
That's probably how I found your channel, looking at workshop builds. So I think that was a great way to launch the channel.
It was a good way to start the channel, and the video performed brilliantly well. But when I looked back at some of the methods I used on that build, it fills me with dread, and it's a bit of a surprise that it's still standing to this day.
I know I'd be the same, and that's why I can't watch my old work. You were influenced by John and Matthias, so they're both famous for making their own machines. Now, I remember you making your own router kind of domino thing, but have you ever thought about making another machine?
That particular project still brings back nightmares for me. Things with mechanical elements is something that I just don't have the right skill set for. So yeah, I don't see any more machinery projects on the horizon personally. Although saying that, I do have an old lathe sitting in my shed, and I'm desperate to try and utilize the motor in that for something. I did think about making some kind of giant disc sander, but I'm just not confident enough with that type of project. How about yourself? I know that you've dabbled in lots of bandsaw restorations and similar.
Yeah, I've thought about it. I've thought about building a table saw. I think the trouble is there'd be interesting projects, but I'm not sure you'd ever make anything better than is commercially available. So maybe I would like to get a lathe, and I'd like to make some attachments for it, something like adding a disc sander to it, because I think they really lend themselves to having other functions.
I should probably send you that lathe that's sitting in my shed then.
I've seen that lathe. You can keep it. I don't know if you feel the same, but the more I do this, the better quality tools I want.
Yeah.
Not necessarily bigger, but I've got the Axminster bandsaw. Now I'd get the trade one. Because just that little bit of plastic annoys me, that it flexes and things. I'm using it every day. I want the nice things.
I mostly agree, although stuff from Festool and companies like that has never really appealed to me, aside from the domino, but obviously that's a bit more of a one-trick pony. I remember when I first got the domino, being quite surprised at how plasticky it felt. I was expecting this piece of metal that was built like a tank, but when I got it out of the box, I was like, oh.
I think Festool, if you want to commit to a battery system, I can understand why you get lots of Festool, but I kind of feel a drill is a drill almost.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a Bosch professional one, which I use, which I think was about £100, but all the tool manufacturers have something around that price point, and they're all pretty good, I imagine.
Also, I think it comes down to the type of tools. So you mentioned a drill. You could buy any £25 to £30 drill and, you know, drill many, many holes with it and be perfectly happy with it. Whereas I've had bad experiences with tools. The one that springs to mind is belt sanders. Back in the day, I don't know how many cheap belt sanders I went through within the space of 2 or 3 years. I was buying the cheapest belt sanders I could find in Argos, and spending maybe £30 to £40 on them. And I killed all of them so quickly. The other tool that springs to mind was an impact driver that I had from Bauer, from Screwfix. And I think that lasted me about 10 months and then it stopped driving screws. And I took it back and I was able to get a refund on it. But at that point, that was when I started to think, you know, I need to invest in a Bowery platform of tools that's going to serve me well for many years. I don't want to be constantly worrying about reliability issues.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's a false economy if you're using them that much. If you're using a drill twice a year, you can get away with something cheap. If you're using it every day, then you're just going to keep replacing that drill. So why not just get a good one that's going to last you years? Same with machinery, I think. I've had some cheap bandsaws and they're pretty rubbish. And I've had a few table saws, you might have noticed.
More than you've had hot dinners.
That's very true.
Tell us about your workshop, Matt, because obviously some people that are listening might not be familiar with our setups.
So I moved to this house 3 years ago and I built my workshop at the bottom of the garden. It's about 20 foot by 8 foot externally, and I hate myself for using feet, but it's strange that in workshops that's how we talk, or in sheds. I wish it was twice as big, which I'm sure we all say about many things. I know you had an even smaller workshop to start with, so I can't really moan. it's a cozy little space, but with doing YouTube, you need so much room to move lights and camera around. I wish it was bigger.
And yet you still have space for a log burner.
The log burner is one of those things that makes working in there in the winter enjoyable.
Yeah, I'm very envious of that, actually.
Would you think about getting one put in?
I would love to, but I think I would be more likely to put one into our bungalow before I put one into the workshop. We're on oil heating here, which is very expensive. And in the winter, we're usually both, me and my partner, that is, walking around in thermal hoodies and woolly hats.
I was giving away wood last winter. I had more than I could burn, so it's free heating. I think it'd be different if you was heating a house, but the workshop, I don't want it to get to 18 or 20 degrees, because if you're working, you're roasting. I want to get it to about 13 degrees, and that's a really comfortable working temperature. It means any finishes or glues actually dry, and I'm not wearing too many layers of clothing.
I rely upon a small oil-filled radiator, and it's a similar thing for my workshop. I can usually get the temperature up to about 8 or 9 degrees in the winter, but that's about as high as it will go, but that's fine. I do wish it got a little bit warmer than that, and I should probably invest in a bigger one.
And you've insulated all your loft space as well, haven't you, in there?
That's true. And I'd love to be able to say it's made a huge difference, but of course I insulated it kind of as soon as I moved in, so I really don't know what it was like to work in prior to insulating, but I can imagine it has made quite a good difference.
So your first YouTube video was building your first workshop. How big was that?
So the first workshop that I built was 4.3 meters by 2.8 meters. Do you know what that is in feet?
I know what that is. And how big's the one you got now?
The one I have now, I think, is 6 meters by about 5.5 meters, which I must say is bigger than I ever thought I would have. When we were house hunting 2 years ago, we looked at three properties. The first two that we looked at, I would have needed to build within the garden to create a workspace. But this third property that we looked at had a double garage that was detached from the bungalow, and it just ticked all of the boxes for me. Even though the house wasn't as nice as the previous two we looked at, I was able to convince my wife to move in here. And yeah, it's got a pitched roof, so there was space for adding a loft space in as well, which is great for empty boxes and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's quite a big upgrade from the previous one then.
Yeah, I think I worked out at the time that it was almost three times the size of my first workshop.
Very nice. Initially, I remember you had quite a lot of traffic noise, but I've not noticed anything recently. Has your sound insulation really paid off?
It's definitely made a big difference. I don't think insulating the walls, and it's a thermalite block wall that I insulated by adding some framing panels in front of them with some, I think it was 50 millimeter rock wool sound slab insulation. And yeah, I don't think insulating the walls really made that much of a difference, but adding the ceiling and insulating that, and also insulating the front roller door, made a dramatic improvement in terms of the amount of sound that was coming into the space.
You redid the window as well, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I took out two single glazed hardwood windows and replaced them with double glazed PVC ones. And that's definitely made a difference too. Although both of those windows have trickle vents, so I still do get some noise in.
Yeah, mine have trickle vents as well. I'm not sure if they're needed or not.
I think they're a good idea in a workshop setting, because obviously getting airflow into your timber can only be a good thing. So I'm assuming what you do is now a full-time thing for you.
Yes. So when I moved to this house about 3 years ago, I quit my chef's job at the time, which I was only doing part-time, and went full-time as a maker, I guess. So I was selling physical items I made, wooden items, online and YouTube. But over the years, the selling things has declined and concentrating on YouTube has increased. So are you a full-time content creator? Are you an influencer?
I hate that term.
I know.
So when I got started about 6 years ago, I was full-time at the insurance company and also putting out a weekly video on YouTube and trying to make projects every week. And that was difficult to maintain, but I think I did that for about 3 years. And at that point, the channel was bringing in enough money to be able to go from full-time to part-time at the insurance company. And then as of December 2020, I was able to go full-time with the YouTube side of things, which was pretty amazing. It was a dream come true. What would you say are the favorite and least favorite parts of what you do? And I guess I asked that question from both a woodworking perspective and a YouTube perspective.
Woodworking, what it started as a way to relax and as a creative outlet. So getting to do that every day is amazing. I like my little workshop at the bottom of the garden with the wood burner, but in the winter, when I go out there like 8 a.m. and it's still pitch black and it's 0 degrees and it takes a few hours for it to get nice and warm, then I'm not so motivated. I remember there was snow on the ground for a month last year, and trudging up through the sludge every day was not great. One of the things I really like about YouTube is the interacting with people, and I guess social media in general, chatting to people on Instagram or on YouTube comments. It's nice to see people engaging with you. Probably one of the worst things about YouTube and woodworking is trying to do YouTube and woodworking at the same time. It ruins a good woodworking project having to film it, I feel. And sometimes when I do something and don't film it, it's so enjoyable.
Yeah, I can completely relate to that. For me, probably my favorite part of this job is being alone and being able to do what I do in my workshop with my headphones on and listening to a good podcast or some good music. And on the woodworking side of things, finishing projects is probably my favorite part of them. And it often interests me when woodworkers talk about finishing as a stage of the process that they hate, because for me, that's always the most rewarding part. It's when the project comes together and starts looking aesthetically nice. My least favorite part of the job varies from week to week. There are times when I can't stand editing videos. And then there are times when it seems almost second nature and I just fly into the editing and get it done instantly. And equally, there are times when I don't feel motivated to go out into the workshop. And I guess motivation is probably something that we should touch on in a future episode as well.
It's interesting you say about finishing, because I think it really comes across in your videos that you enjoy it because you do a very thorough job.
I'm a little bit obsessed with wood finishes. I don't really know why. I find myself reading articles in the evening about various finishes, and whenever anyone else puts out a YouTube video about wood finishes, I'm usually the first to view it.
It was interesting your answer, because it actually made me realise that I feel exactly the same, as I like being alone. And actually, I'd forgotten really the reason I started this whole thing is because I hated my job and this is what I wanted to do. And now I'm kind of living the dream.
How many people were you in the kitchen with when you were a chef?
It depended over the years, but as the years went on, it became less because no one could work with me. No, it got so hard to get staff. And I think that's even harder now. But yeah, there'll be staff shortages, which made it even more stressful. So some days I've been in the kitchen on my own.
One of the things for me is being away from distractions, because when I'm concentrating on something, I get really irritated when there's a distraction. So if my phone's bleeping or if somebody's asking me questions when I'm trying to focus on something, I don't know whether that's an introvert trait. I guess it probably might be.
I think I can concur with that. How many shots have been ruined because of your phone beeping?
Countless.
Yeah.
Or the postman bringing a parcel.
Oh, yeah, the doorbell. And it's always when I've got full PPE and I've got to rip my respirator, my ear defenders and my goggles off and run down the path to get to the front door. Or the postman looks at me in full PPE and wonders what drugs I'm cooking up at the bottom of the garden. What is your favourite project or your most proud project?
I think the project that I'm most proud of was an electric guitar that I built a few years ago. I'm mainly proud of it, not for the end result, because there were multiple problems with it that I encountered and showed within the project videos. But I'm proud of it because I really had to push myself to make that, because I had no idea how to make a guitar. And I spent hours and hours on YouTube and on internet forums researching how to do it. Yeah, so the electric guitar was a real stretch project for me, and I'm very proud of how it turned out, even though it was far from being perfect. In terms of the best project, last year when I made the shed at the top of our garden, just a simple storage shed to hold basic stuff, garden tools and bikes and things like that. Again, it's not necessarily groundbreaking, but I feel like I accounted for things that I really should have accounted for back when I built my first workshop. So I think I've built it in a way that I know it's going to last.
So that was your redemption video.
That was the shed redemption video. If only I could go back and replace the first workshop build with that one. But yeah, it's a good project and it was a fun one to do as well. And I'm finding myself increasingly drawn towards more carpentry style jobs, windows, doors, sheds, things like that. And I think that's because I had a bad experience a few months back with a particular furniture project, which was a corner cabinet build that I still have nightmares about. And ever since, I feel like I've lost my mojo a little bit in terms of woodworking and furniture.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think my answer would be similar because I built a few shepherd's huts. So they're big sheds on wheels, really. And I don't know why the bigger the project, somehow the more impressive it is somehow.
Yeah.
Even though you can make a tiny little box that's far more technically difficult to do than a shed or a shepherd's hut. But yeah, they're impressive. And I guess the most challenging one was I did a 16-foot long, sorry to go back to imperial measurements, shepherd's hut, which was split in two and had two bathrooms in. So it had a toilet and a basin and a shower in each side. So it was the plumbing and the electrics and the hookup points. And that was a real challenge and a big learning curve. But yeah, I really enjoyed doing it. And I don't know, working outside on these more carpentry type projects, I find very satisfying. But I wouldn't want to be on a building site every day being a carpenter at the same time. I like being self-employed. I enjoy on Instagram with Bare Hands. He makes very interesting buildings like roundhouses and tree houses, all his own designs. And down, I think in Devon or maybe he's Dorset, building all these things on glamping sites. And that looks a very satisfying job.
Well, that sounds cool. I'll have to check that out. I remember seeing you building those shepherd's huts and they looked brilliant. Is that something that you could see yourself doing again in future?
I did four and I sold them all. And then I kind of thought, oh, these were a bit of a fad. I saw so many companies starting up, like this is quite a saturated market now. And then Brexit and COVID happened, which greatly increased the British holiday market. And now people that I talk to who make them cannot make them quick enough. They're turning down orders. So I kind of wish I'd still kept doing that.
I suppose it's a space and logistical issue more so than anything else as well.
Yeah, I think your neighbours would get upset pretty quickly if you were making them in your driveway. So this was the most stressful projects I ever had because making them was fine. It's then getting them loaded on the back of a lorry to transport them. And the last one I sold went on the back of this van. And at one point they were hoisting it on and it must have been at a 45 degree angle. And I'm thinking, I never designed it to ever go at an angle anywhere near that. And I was just worried the whole body was going to detach from the chassis. So yeah, they were very stressful at the same time. And I don't do this to be stressed.
And was there good money to be made with that kind of a project?
There was when I was doing it kind of just in a car park in a pub. I looked into it as soon as I'd had to rent a small workshop with a roller shutter to get them in and out for £800 or £1,000 a month, then insurance and all the other bills, and then maybe get a member of staff, because actually it's quite dangerous to do that kind of thing on your own because you're lifting big panels and stuff. We all do it. We think, oh, we'll just get away with it this once. But if it's your business and suddenly all the profit disappears, then you're on tight margins. And if you don't sell one that week, then you're in trouble. And yeah, I decided I don't want to do this as a business.
And you mentioned things like electrical skills. Are they skills that you had before you started doing that? Or did you have to learn pretty quickly?
So I don't think I mentioned in my chefing career, I actually spent a few years running a pub, and it was a bit of it dated back to the 14th century. And it was an old timber frame building. So when you run something like that, there's constantly things that need fixing that are your responsibility and you can't afford to get someone in. So I did lots of plumbing and electrical bits out of necessity. But yeah, no, I just watched a load of YouTube videos and worked it out as I went along, really.
And did you ever think about going into the handyman business?
No, because I hate dealing with people in real life. So the thought of every day meeting another stranger and doing work for them, I would find horrific.
Yeah, I can relate to that too.
Also, I feel I have imposter syndrome. If someone that was paying me to hang a picture, I would be nervous about doing it, like messing up their walls. Yeah, I do this kind of stuff all day, every day for myself or for family.
What goals do you have for your business or your YouTube channel going forward, Matt?
I'm doing it full time and I'm making enough just about to survive. So I'd like to get to the stage where, no, I don't want to talk about money. No, that's bad. It's just a boring answer, isn't it? I want to make more money.
Well, I don't think so, because I think it says that basically you're happy doing what you're doing.
So I love what I'm doing now. It would definitely be nice to be a bit more financially secure. I would love a bigger workshop. I find the space limits the projects I can do and the tools I can have. And I don't want to be one of these people that moans about it, because we all get those comments, I could do it if I had those tools. And it's not about the tools or the workspace. I would love bigger tools and a bigger workspace.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. It's not about the tools. It's about attitude more than anything, isn't it? It's about, you know, what can I do with what I have right now? I don't think either of us would have got to where we are now if we'd have had the attitude of, oh, somebody on YouTube has got a domino and is assembling a cabinet with that.
Definitely not, especially as I watch quite a lot of American channels, as I imagine we all do, and they have workshops bigger than the whole of my house with massive bits of machinery. I remember one of my first pallet projects, I think the one I was talking about making a coat rack, I was using an old chest freezer that was broken as my workbench and a few tools I got at a boot sale. It's all about just getting started and doing it rather than waiting until you've got the perfect setup.
Yeah, resourcefulness. For me, I think goals going forward, I don't really have any goals. Unlike you, I'm pretty happy doing what I'm doing right now. I do see myself potentially going a bit more into the property improvements side of things. I've dabbled with that on my channel before. I've recently put out a demolition video and I'm doing some groundworks and laying a patio at the moment. And then after that, I'll be looking to build a pergola. But I look at channels like The Restoration Couple and Gosford Handyman, and that side of things appeals to me.
So would you consider moving house again just to get another project?
I definitely wouldn't consider moving house again. I think when we moved here 2 years ago, we both knew that this would be our forever home, or for the foreseeable anyway. And right now I don't have the money to buy a property to renovate, but perhaps one day that might be an option.
Yeah, sounds a great goal.
I think it's just a way of not getting bored. Learning new skills is important, and I think it keeps the brain active. I think it's just important to keep stretching yourself.
I agree. I get bored doing the same thing. Something I've been talking about for years is learning to weld. Is there a skill like that that's on your to-do list maybe in the near future?
Welding would be an interesting one, but I feel like you kind of need almost a dedicated space for that. But one thing that I have been hoping to learn a bit more about one day is upholstery, get into making armchairs and things like that. It's something, again, it's something I've dabbled with in the past, but I've never done it and had the best results.
Yeah, it's something I've dabbled with as well, but I can see that really pairing well with your furniture restoration kind of interest.
I've always been of the mindset of whatever I need to learn, I can find it on the internet for free somewhere.
Yeah, so am I. And yeah, especially as the alternative is going out and meeting someone. And then
yeah. But sometimes the videos just aren't there.
No, upholstery is underrepresented, because I've looked before and they're pretty bad.
And also just the amount of rubbish content on YouTube. You can trawl through 10 awful videos before finding what you actually need.
So what have you been watching and enjoying on YouTube this week?
So the big one for me recently has been that end grain glue myths from Patrick Sullivan. I don't know if you saw that video. I know a lot of people are talking about it.
I did. And the Wood Whispers follow up and Stumpy Nubs follow up. Yeah, it's been a great little ride.
Yeah, and he's just uploaded a follow up to that as well, which is the strength in mitre joints. And there's been a lot of talk about how it doesn't really affect joinery in any way. And to some extent, those people are right. But I just think the concept of that myth being busted is quite significant. And it makes you think about what else are people telling me that might not be correct.
I'll have to watch that mitre one, because I always reinforce picture frames, but I don't know. I always think the amount of stress in their life they're going to come under is so minimal that they probably don't need it.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the frames that you buy, you look at the back and they've just got a couple of staples in them, haven't they, to hold them together.
I was watching Bish Bash Bosch's speaker stands.
Man, yeah, what a project.
I can't get my head around how complicated it is. Very impressive.
And I love that he just throws into the video, oh yeah, by the way, here's a hand-operated CNC machine that I made a while back. It's just, like, did I miss this? Was this on your channel? Because I don't think I've seen this before.
Perfectly normal. And using his homemade table saw, which looks like a professional table saw.
Mm.
It's all fantastic. Who's someone I've been following for years. And I think I started by watching his tool reviews and his progression into, well, I want to say fine woodworking, but it's amazing woodworking has been great. Well worth a watch.
I find myself watching less and less woodworking content because I've overindulged on it for 6 years. But it's a channel that I've been subscribed to probably for all of that 6 years, which is Matt Cremona. And the videos that I've been enjoying aren't really woodworking focused. They're more around him organizing things for his business. So you'll see him driving forklifts around. And I don't know why, but I just find them quite relaxing and soothing to watch. So I'll put them on in the evening and watch Matt Cremona driving a forklift truck around. Do you watch those videos, Matt?
I watch them occasionally. I love the progression. When I started, he was in his very nice garage making fine furniture. And then the bandsaw mill and now this business. It's just so impressive what he's doing. So ambitious as well.
Yeah, his furniture projects are really next level, aren't they?
Oh, they're amazing. I do fancy one of his slab top workbenches though.
Yeah, he sells kits for those, doesn't he?
I don't think he's going to ship to the UK though, unfortunately.
Probably not.
Kind of a bit burnt out on that as well because I've spent so many years watching it. But what the world really needs is another woodworking podcast.
And on that note,
yeah.
I guess the other thing we should talk about are what our intentions are for this podcast going forward. We both mentioned the possibility of getting some guests on here.
Yeah, that'd be great. I think we've both got a lot of people be interested to find out their backstories and how they got started as well.
Yeah. And when the conversation dries up, get somebody else involved.
I couldn't just talk to you every week.
How do you sign off a podcast? I have no idea how to end a podcast.
Yeah, that's the end of the one and only episode. Thank you for listening to the first episode. We're learning as we're going, but I hope you enjoyed it.
Do we have to do the whole rate the podcast nonsense?
I don't think in episode one.
That's it for episode one. Thank you very much for listening. You can find Matthew on YouTube by searching for Badger Workshop, and you can find me by searching for Rag and Bone Brown. There'll be links to both of our channels in the show notes. We've also set up an Instagram and Facebook page for the Workshop Banter podcast. Both can be found at Workshop Banter, all as one word, and we'll leave links to those pages too. Or you can email us, workshopbanter@gmail.com. We would really appreciate any feedback about the podcast. Please do tell us if you liked it, or if you didn't like it, please tell us why. And let us know if there's anything you'd like us to talk about in future. We're also keen to answer any questions that you might have, whether they are woodworking related or otherwise. So please do get in touch, and thank you for listening. We'll